Good morning and welcome to Thursday Morning Roundtable. I want to send out a special welcome to the many guests that we have here today. And also, while he's standing up, a new member, Dan Hartnett. Dan, wave your hand. Dan is with Prudential Realty. He's also, of course, active in many civic organizations, including the boards of directors of Home Headquarters, the Salvation Army, Habitat for Humanity, and others. So get to know Dan if you don't already. I also wanted to thank all of you. It was before we had our winter break that started a little bit earlier than we had expected because of a couple of snowstorms in December. But as we, you all know, we lost a couple of people very close to the round table. Of course, Tom Lethem, for many years a member of the round table, passed away. Unfortunately, didn't make it back to TMR after, as he was recovering and up and down. And also Alice Smith, of course, Lee's widow, who, although she wasn't a regular at the round table, many of you knew her, and she was involved civically and socially. And I want to thank those of you who, in their names, have donated to the Lee Smith TMR Scholarship Fund for part-time students at University College, because that is still a very important scholarship fund at UC, as you know, that helps to support two part-time students each year. So thank you all for your support there. I also wanted to congratulate our own Fred Fisk and Dr. David Smith, who are here. Last night I saw they were, Dr. Smith is the honorary chair of the Vera House White Ribbon Campaign, and we will be hearing from Randy Bregman and Chauncey Brown from Vera House in March when that White Ribbon Campaign kicks off. Still a very important issue, as we know, we're reading all the time about domestic and sexual violence in our community, and we're going to talk about what we all can do. So, good to see you here. Next week, we will be talking about redistricting in New York State. There are a couple proposals out there. The League of Women Voters has one. Senator Dave Valesky has sponsored a bill. And Grant Rear will be here to talk about kind of the flip side of partisan, you know, in quotes, versus nonpartisan redistricting. So that is next week, and you'll be getting the February schedule, which will also be on our website soon. But today, it's my pleasure to introduce my boss, Dean B. Gonzalez of University College, to introduce today's guest speaker.
Buenos dias. All right. So you guys are the ones who don't fly off to Florida and stay here and endure, you know, our winter. It's my pleasure to be here this morning to introduce a friend and a colleague. But really, you know, aren't we like living in a community where women rock in leadership roles? I mean, the list is pretty long if I started, right? So anyway, it's my pleasure to introduce this morning Dr. Debbie Seidel, the seventh president of Onondaga Community College, one of the largest community colleges in the SUNY system. And if my fact check is correct, you're at about 12,000 enrollments. Isn't that phenomenal, up on the hill? Dr. Seidel has guided record enrollment growth, a number of transformative projects at the college, and a capital improvement campaign that has resulted in the investment of more than $100 million in campus facilities. In addition, she has helped expand community access to higher education through distance education and flexible program offerings, and secured gifts and grants totaling more than $25 million. We are especially excited at Syracuse University with our new partnerships with OCC, and particularly the 2+2 program that will benefit students and families in Central New York. The 2+2 is a collaborative effort between SU and OCC that will provide qualified students with dual admissions and guaranteed transfer into 33 degree programs at SU for students who meet the requirements. And this agreement goes into place as students enter as entering freshman students at OCC. And then we work with them all the way through, right through their transfer. So it is a pretty phenomenal program and package. In recognition of her community and college leadership, Dr. Seidel has received several awards, including the Association of Community College Trustees, the 2008 CEO of the Year Award for the Northeast Region Women in Business Award, and the YWCA Diversity Achievers Award. Please join me in welcoming Dr. Debbie Seidel to Thursday Morning Roundtable.
Bea, thank you for that very, very gracious introduction. I have been a great admirer of Bea's in her many roles of leadership in our community, and so it's so, sorry. I said I've been a great admirer of Bea's in her many leadership roles in our community over the years, so it's wonderful to have you provide the introduction this morning. Can you hear me? Good morning. As the community's college, and we do take the middle part of our name very seriously at OCC, as the community's college, it's very important for us to always be looking at ways that we can be more responsive to the local community. So in that vein, I'm very happy to have the opportunity to meet with all of you this morning, and what I hope to do is to take about 20 minutes to give you an update about OCC, where we are, what our challenges are, what our opportunities are, and there are many, and then to engage with you, to hear from you, your ideas and your thoughts about how we can, you notice the title, continue to reinvent Onondaga Community College so that we are ever more responsive to the needs of the Central New York community. With that, the college was, as many of you know, established in 1961, and that means that we are going to be celebrating our 50th anniversary in the 2011-2012 year. I always have people say, oh no, I can't believe the college has been there that long, but indeed we have, and over that time, the college has reinvented itself many times in response to local needs. When I arrived at the college in 2000, the Middle States reaccreditation process had just been completed. There was a report on my desk from Middle States, and there were two recommendations. The first one, as the Onondaga community changes, the college needs to reinvent itself to the extent necessary to meet the needs of a changed society. And secondly, the college should raise the priority of the activities designed to attract new students and retain them once they choose OCC. I took that as my marching orders going forward, and so as you'll see, that has really been the focus during my more than 10 years at Onondaga Community College. So in the spirit of planning, our first strategic plan was conceptualized in 1999, and I worked with the Board of Trustees and the local community to flesh out how we could advance that plan, how we could be sure that we were investing the resources entrusted to us in the best ways possible to serve the local community. So we developed a framework for success, implemented it in the early 2000s, and had three focal points, student access being number one. We absolutely have to continue to be affordable. We have to find ways to ensure that Onondaga Community College is always within reach of area students. We are a gateway for so many individuals to get into college, and as Bea mentioned, we are being very aggressive in developing relationships with wonderful colleges and universities like Syracuse University and all the area colleges so that our students can go on to complete baccalaureate and graduate degrees. Secondly, the quality of our educational programs and services has to continue to be a primary responsibility, because it's not just about bringing students into college, it's about ensuring that when they leave us, they either have the skills needed to perform well on the job, or when they transfer to the great universities where they are pursuing a baccalaureate degree, that they are well prepared for that and they're successful when they get there. And finally, again, as the community's college, we have to provide value to the community. We have to get graduates into those industries, into the workforce, and help our local companies be competitive. That's a very important part of our mission. So this simply gives, please don't try to read it, it may strain your eyes and it's still early, but I do just want to highlight some major activities that we have been involved in over the past decade, and this is a very high level timeline, but there have been transformational initiatives and projects underway at OCC that has allowed us to serve students in new and better ways. We have completely re-engineered enrollment services, for example. There was a time when a new student coming to the college would have to go to 5 different buildings and 8 different offices just to get enrolled. It was a very complicated process, and I'm convinced that we lost a lot of students who are already, in many cases, intimidated by the process, especially if they're older students, non-traditional. So now we have the front door, we have the welcome desk. They come to one place and they get through the enrollment process in a very convenient, well-structured manner. And so I'm pleased to say that our student satisfaction rate with enrollment services went from about 35% to 95%. And I think we've done something right on that front. We've had enormous investment, as Bea said, in the capital facilities. Really, as a result of planning and determining where investments needed to be in response to community needs, we were able to build facilities and add facilities that made sense for the institution, and that includes adding residence halls. I continue to hear, and even heard this morning, about the impact of residence halls at Onondaga Community College. Perhaps if there has been one single change that the community has really paid attention to and that has made a difference in the desirability of OCC, it is student housing. We added 585 beds, and ever since we opened residence halls in the fall of 2006, we have had 100% occupancy. Last fall, we had 400 people on a wait list before they finally just stopped adding their names, thinking, I'm probably not going to get called. So we are looking at phase two student housing now, understanding that for many people, even in the local community, that whole college experience has value. And we've been able to provide that and keep more local residents here, as opposed to we were finding that students from Onondaga County and surrounding counties were going to those community colleges nearby that offered the full college experience through student housing. We brought them back and we've been able to track that. So that's good for our community. We've expanded athletics, and that too is a way for us to provide access. Now, I'm a humanities major. My PhD is in English, so I'm not an athlete. You can probably tell that by looking at me. But I really have developed over my 23 years in higher education a great appreciation for athletics as an access point for so many students. They want to continue to play sports after high school. They will really try exceedingly hard to do well in academics so that they can keep playing sports. And that's a great thing. Whatever it takes to get a student into college and to get that student through with a degree. So we are expanding 15 sports, and I'm sure all of you have been watching. We've had championship lacrosse teams, men's and women's. We have had wonderful sports, and I really do believe firmly that the scholar athlete is alive and well in community colleges. We just have people who are very engaged, coaches who are very engaged in the academic success of our young athletes. Also, a great expansion of the arts, arts across campus, and a wonderful partnership with local arts organizations, including Syracuse University. And finally, establishing the Regional Higher Education Center, which allows our graduates to complete baccalaureate and graduate degrees on our campus. So we have partners like Cuca College out of Western New York, Casanova, SUNY Delhi, SUNY Cortland, and a number of others. And it's wonderful to be able to respond to what I've heard for 10 years, when is OCC going to become a four-year school? Well, the answer is we're not. We are looking for ways to offer what the community needs, but to do it in partnership. We believe that's the right way to respond to the need in this case and to continue to do what we do well, and that is the first 2 years of college. So it's working well. We have more than 100 graduates actually out of CUCA. I spoke at their commencement ceremony in December, and it was so gratifying to see local residents who had taken advantage of that opportunity to complete a baccalaureate degree on the OCC campus. B mentioned that enrollment is over 12,000, and you can see the trajectory over the 10-year period. We have a distinguishing characteristic, and I think all of you know this, but I just want to reiterate it. I can't reiterate enough that what distinguishes OCC in the higher education landscape of Central New York is that 95% of our graduates remain in the state and most remain local after they graduate from OCC. We have 40,000 alumni, and we recently took a look at alumni and tried to sort out where they are, what they're doing. We found that 460 of those individuals are local presidents of companies, CEOs, partners. They are in senior level positions. They are business leaders in our community, and we're very proud of that fact. We think the value that we add as an institution is all about those alumni who are out doing great things in every industry in Central New York. This just gives a snapshot of the programs that we offer. So it's important to think about how this college is, again, responding to local demand. And you'll see that about 66% of our enrollment is in the transfer curricula. And so when you look at the other pieces of the pie in terms of the program areas, technologies represent about 8%, public service, this is homeland security, fire protection, law enforcement, early childhood education, about 5% of the enrollment is there. We prepare the vast majority of first responders locally. Signature programs, architectural technology, art, electronic media communication, music, and photography are very popular programs. Most of those students transfer, even though they are not in the transfer curriculum. We have a business program, 6% of the enrollment there, and that program is growing. And finally, health professions. These are the costliest programs, David, as you know so well. Nursing, physical therapy assistant, respiratory care, and surgical technology. These graduates are in great demand, 100% job placement. They are, again, though, programs where certainly the need is there, the demand is there, the expense is great. And so our challenge, just to give you an overview, in looking at cost, it's really to make certain that we are able to balance revenue and cost in a way that we're responding to the community but not breaking the bank, if you will. I am very proud of the fact that we've again made great progress in establishing the kinds of 2+2 arrangements that we most recently completed with Syracuse University. 33 different programs are now going to be seamless for OCC graduates who maintain a certain GPA. They will get that support from the time they enroll at OCC. They will, we believe, be able to just have a seamless transition to Syracuse University. And I'd like to share with this group that I received more phone calls, more notes, letters about this arrangement than anything else in my 10 years at the college. Even more feedback than housing. The local community was absolutely delighted and thrilled to have this this opportunity, an OCC to SU transfer. So it was very exciting to see that transform the college in yet another new way. Also, ESF, I'm not sure if all of you are aware that Neil Murphy and I, a couple of years ago, worked out a similar 2+2 guaranteed admission program whereby our students entering OCC are also entering ESF. And the distinguishing characteristic there is that in their third and fourth years at ESF, they're paying OCC tuition. So it's really a phenomenal opportunity, and there is high interest in those programs. And so other great colleges, Lemoyne and Upstate and Cornell and UB, but we have articulation agreements with about 70 different colleges and universities, and we are pushing to make those guaranteed admission like the ones that we've developed with ESF and SU. So now we are in a planning period. We have had great success in so many areas, but we still have a lot of work to do. And we're certainly mindful of the difficulties in government and budgets and the increasing difficulty in funding higher education from both the state and the county governments. And so Onondaga Community College, in looking ahead to 2016, developing our next five-year plan, we set this forth as our structure for planning. And essentially, looking at box one, managing the present, being competitive, being about continuous improvement, we certainly want to be focused there. And about 75% of our resources will need to be in managing the present, making sure that we provide those high-quality programs when we bring students to the college, that we graduate those students once they come in. But we also wanted to be focused on two other areas. We kind of jumped back in the boxes. So box two is selectively abandoning the past. We're well aware that there are programs, this is natural, there are programs that become obsolete. They are no longer serving the public. They are no longer being responsive to local industry needs. And so we believe that we need to be much more rigorous in abandoning those programs and services that are not adding value. And finally, our big focus in this planning cycle is on creating the future, figuring out what tomorrow's needs will be, and very specifically, making sure that we are entrepreneurial, that we're innovative in looking at ways to generate new revenue for this institution, because we certainly don't expect that public funding is going to enjoy a resurgence, at least in the next five-year cycle. And so with that, our guiding ideas and principles, nothing that's worth doing can be achieved in a lifetime. Nothing we do, however virtuous, can be accomplished alone. We have been on a tour, if you will. We've had so many different meetings with community groups, with we met with Focus 2 weeks ago, had a wonderful turnout and great participation, and ideas came forward. We are also engaging the internal campus community. We're engaging the business community. We've had a number of corporate breakfasts. We have a strategic planning council that's guiding this effort to ensure that we get that kind of broad-based input. So we very much believe that we need to be partnering with the local community in planning the priorities of OCC over the next 5 years. American higher education institutions are overwhelmed by competing demands. David, is that fair? Overwhelmed, I think, is a pretty good word. That threaten the capacity of higher education to meet ever-increasing expectations. Most institutions, this is according to Robert Dickerson, are unrealistically striving to be all things to all people. Prioritization is a necessary process to accomplish reform. So really, it's about priorities. It's about taking limited resources and applying those where we can have the biggest impact toward our mission, fulfilling our mission. And finally, as the community's college and an anchor institution, Onondaga must measure its impact for the individual student as well as the impact for the community as a whole. So we have to have that dual focus, looking at our impact certainly to individual lives, but also in the same way looking at how we are able to advance the goals of our Central New York community. This is a slide that I sometimes accompany with a disclaimer. It can be sort of scary, so if you're a sensitive soul, you may want to close one eye or something. This is looking at New York State student success outcomes, and it looks at a ninth grader, so 100 ninth graders in New York State. These are averages. So 100 students start ninth grade. We are going to lose 60. We are going to only graduate 64 of those. We're going to lose 36. We're going to lose 16 who don't go to college. 32 will enroll in a four-year school, 16 in a two-year school. But look at that bottom line. Only four of those 100 ninth graders, on average, will complete a two-year degree, and only 13 will complete a four-year degree on time. Now, that's scary in terms of looking at human talent, human resources, the competitiveness of our nation, not only our community, but our nation. So thinking about a pipeline, this is really where a big focus for Onondaga Community College is going to be going forward. Again, we've really been focused on partnering with the other higher education institutions, but we want to be much more aggressive in partnering with our pre-K-12 institutions as well to try and address these pipeline issues, to find ways that we can have an impact in keeping students in school and getting them through with that college credential, because certainly the Department of Labor tells us that there are very few jobs, even now, fewer in the future, for individuals with only a high school diploma. And certainly individuals without the high school diploma are going to find increasingly fewer options available to them. So looking at environmental shifts, the disconnect between employer needs and the available labor force, growth in demand by 2018, 63% of new and replacement jobs require some college or better, but look at the supply. It's not keeping pace. We're seeing that 61% of companies have difficulty finding qualified workers. 39% needs for qualified workers are being met. So this is not what it needs to be. We need to do a better job of having people prepared for the workforce, and certainly the community college is one important player in that challenge. Environmental shifts. This slide simply shows that education has a tremendous impact on unemployment and earnings. So if you look at that unemployment rate line, you really see that there's a widening unemployment gap. In November 2009, unemployment rate for those with less than a high school diploma was three times higher than for those with a bachelor's degree or above. And by 2016, many of today's low-skilled jobs will completely disappear. So education is very directly related to both earnings as well as unemployment, and it's just extremely important when you make these connections to look at the ways that all of our higher education institutions can make a difference. Demographic changes are also occurring, impacting college enrollments and the kinds of programs and services that we provide. So this is a snapshot of 2008, the U.S. adult learner population. The total number enrolled in college, 18 million. The total number of adult learners, 90 million. So there are so many needs out there, and again, we are not doing the job we need to do to respond to those demands. It will be part of our planning cycle going forward. This is looking at OCC's realities in terms of revenue, and just to show that the county sponsor, local sponsor support, has declined steadily. It's about 12.5% of our total revenues now. New York State aid has declined to about 28%. And student tuition, take a look at that. We have increased student tuition in direct response to declining public funding. That cannot continue in this direction. Otherwise, we price students out of higher education. Our tuition is about $3,600 a year. And some people say, well, that's anybody can afford that. That's incredibly low. But it's not the case. We have students who are homeless. We have students for whom a $500 scholarship can make the difference between continuing in school and dropping out. Many of our students, because of socioeconomic circumstances, are really on, their lives are on the boundary. And one thing, having a car breakdown, can make a difference in their continuing toward their college goals. And so we look at these trends and we look at the need to really find ways to become more self-sustaining as an institution. Again, looking at the realities of Onondaga Community College, what you'll see is that looking at the cost of our programs, and again, this is what it's all about labor. It's all about the personnel required to deliver the programs that we offer. That's about 80% of our budget. But the average net gain of 27 programs, 7%, those are largely the transfer programs, so that we make a little money on that. But look at the average net loss of 23 programs, 25%. Health care programs are in there. Technologies programs are in there. Some programs are just extremely expensive to run. And so this is another part of the environment that we're working in. We have to make sure that we're delivering programs that we can financially afford. And so it's a challenge for us going forward. So this is where I would like to begin to summarize and say that over this about 4 month period of gathering input, hearing from the community, talking with students, talking with alumni, talking with corporate leaders, we have several themes that have emerged for planning purposes. And this is where I would like to begin to initiate the discussion and hear from you and hear your ideas. But looking at the emerging themes to date, college for working adults, again, you saw the slide that shows there are so many people out there who have the need, who could benefit from a college degree. We want to accommodate that population, understand what their needs are, and respond. College for high school students. I met with 24 superintendents of Onondaga, Cortland, Madison counties a couple of weeks ago, and they told me that there is a great need if we really want to address this pipeline issue. Many students are not thriving in the high school environment. These superintendents were talking about expanding concurrent enrollment, the program that allows students to take college courses while in high school, but also the notion of early college, meaning that we would, Onondaga Community College would have more high school students on our campus completing their high school diploma and also accumulating credits toward a college degree. These programs exist across the country. We currently serve high school students if they have the permission of their principal. We have students who come and complete their high school diploma on campus, or they get a GED and they're studying at OCC. We need to formalize those programs to make sure that we're, again, not losing students in that very difficult period, junior and senior years in high school. Entrepreneurship alternative, sources of new revenue. We are building a 6,500-seat arena. I don't know how many of you have been on campus lately, but if you have, you've seen that building going up. That is, we believe, going to be a wonderful resource for the local community, but also a way for the college to generate some new revenue. The footprint is laid out. with a 6-lane regulation size track. So we're excited about being able to work with Section 3 and Empire State Games and others to make that facility available. We also, though, are looking to our academic departments. We're looking internally to see the resources that we have on campus and the ways in which we can be entrepreneurial in trying to recover costs for those programs. Community engagement and outreach. How do we do a better, more consistent job of engaging the community in the life of the campus? How do we tap the expertise that you in this room have so that we can do a better job at OCC? Can you come be guest lecturers in our classes? Can you be advisors to our various programs? Do you have expertise in a particular industry so that you can help our faculty ensure that our curricula are up to date and relevant for the employers who will be hiring our graduates? Innovation and excellence in teaching and learning. Certainly ongoing investment in our personnel is extremely important. We believe in learning and we want to continue investment there. But how do we do that in an affordable manner? Workforce, education, economic development will continue to be a big part of our mission, and we want to be able to do that better, more efficiently. Student engagement and success. You saw the slide on how many students graduate. I've already mentioned that many of our students are not able to continue college because of financial reasons. There are a lot of other reasons in the lives, especially of working adults, that they may not complete a degree on time. But we simply have to do a better job of graduating students with credentials, because it's important that we have individuals who are job ready, and right now we're not getting enough through. And finally, remediation. You may not know that about 70% of students who come to OCC place into developmental mathematics. 70%. And so about 50% place into developmental English, reading or writing. And that is an increasing problem, and as you would expect, that's another reason for attrition. If those students are placed into developmental coursework, in many cases that's a deterrent to their ever getting into those college-level courses and moving along toward a degree. So they're in a holding pattern until they get those basic skills. So this is an area that we have to focus on, and again, partner with the public schools so that students are getting the skills they need before they come to us. So with that, I would like to open the floor for questions and comments.
Hi, Dr. Saito. As someone who directs one of the community's organizations, I know firsthand how involved OCC is, and we're so grateful for the number of students and professors that we work with on a regular basis from OCC. But as also someone who is interested in how to run a nonprofit in a more entrepreneurial way, I'd be more interested in learning how you're making up that difference with the decline in public funding with an entrepreneurial approach at OCC.
At this point, I didn't show a slide that indicates how much more grant funding we are getting now than we did 10 years ago, so we are being very aggressive on the grants front, though those funds are harder and harder to get as well, I know you are well aware. But also we are, again, building the arena, but taking advantage of the facilities that we do have and the opportunities to rent those facilities, and we find more and more people interested in coming to the college, especially now that we have student housing. For example, we have a wonderful program in the summers, Quilters by the Lake. I'm not sure if any of you are familiar or participate. A wonderful group of women who bring, and men, who bring fabric and patterns, and they occupy a whole building, and they live on campus. They're coming from all over the region, and they live there for a couple of weeks, and they're quilting, and they have classes and seminars, and it's fabulous. And we're trying to attract more of those kinds of groups who are looking for that sort of multi-purpose space where they can have both a residency and the availability of classrooms. So those are just a couple of examples, and obviously we're getting much more aggressive in fundraising. So we have the campaign, the Reach Beyond campaign, that we had set an original goal of $6 million, and part of that is to establish this presidential scholarship, again, always focused on access, so that it's complimentary to Say Yes, except it would extend to anyone in Onondaga County, not just Syracuse City, so that if a student graduates in the top 20% of his or her class, a free ride at OCC. We believe that will make a big difference, again, in our ability to ensure that local residents have access. We now have a super goal of $7.5 million, and fundraising will definitely be a bigger part of our future as we seek ways to offset those declines. Greg, thank you. Good question.
I'd like to compliment you. I hadn't been up on the campus in 6 years until the Scholastic Art last week, and it's very impressive what's going on up there. Also, one of our employees is one of the Sudanese Lost Boys, and he's put himself through OCC while working for us, and he's still working for us. But I'd like to know, what are the programs which you're considering are passé and you want to change? And I'd like to disagree a bit with the slide that you see over and over again on education, how important it is to get a college education. We've increased our workforce by more than 10% in the last 8 months. Maybe three of them have had a college education. And I know a number of young adults with master's degrees who cannot get jobs. So
it's a good point. It's a good point. Another bit of information about our student population. We have 11 to 16% of our student population are coming to us with baccalaureate or graduate degrees. So sometimes it depends on what that degree is in, because we find many of them coming back to get a degree in nursing or one of the health professions, knowing that that's going to link them directly to jobs. And that goes back to the first part of your question, and that is the programming and what's obsolete and how do we make those determinations. The easiest ones are programs like we eliminated a couple of years ago, a program in stenography. A couple of years ago. That's easy. But other programs that are high cost, so we're looking at all of these indicators of a program's health. And we have quadrants. Is it high demand? Are students getting jobs? What's the cost? Is it high cost, low cost? Looking at these criteria, we have several programs that frequently are up for really close analysis and review. It gets very complicated, though, if you find that the college has invested a lot in facilities to support a particular program, and the cost of retrofitting those facilities for a new program. So the decisions have to be made with extreme care, and especially when retrenchment's involved and people are losing jobs as a result of a program cut. But at the end of the day, you will see programs that are cut. You will see, I'm sure, a lot of agitation around those program cuts, but it is simply unavoidable given the economic circumstances that we're facing. So I'm not naming programs, as you noticed.
Hi, Deb. I'd like to do a couple things. One, first of all, I want to congratulate President Saito on her leadership and the difficult decisions you have made. Just a comment, having been in a number of states in higher education, the quality of New York State community colleges are really second to none in the United States. While they have remediation and they do a lot in the technical areas, and it may be surprising for an academic medical center even to know these things we do, because what is happening in the transition of the first generational students, which are largely diverse, is that they are superb students who, one, don't have the financial means, and two, who want to stay closer to home for those first couple of years. the gateway to all access to public higher education and private higher education is becoming the community college. Had this conversation with Dr. Scorton not too long ago at my alma mater, because we're seeing, as Dr. Seidel pointed out, it is this gateway. So this is an incredible asset, and I guess my question is, how can we help you on the advocacy front? Because your voice alone and that of your incredible faculty is not sufficient. You have a great board, but I think it's going to be very important going forward, given the reality of what you've demonstrated, that you have a larger base of advocacy as we go to Albany, Washington, and beyond.
Thank you, David. That really is very kind of you to ask that particular question. I think part of the challenge and part of what each of you could be helpful with is presenting an up-to-date view of Onondaga Community College. There are outdated views of community colleges as being the college of last resort, and that simply is no longer the case. I'm sure you read in the paper last June that we were the number one choice for Fayetteville Manlius graduates of 2010. We look at yield rates from all of the area high schools. We are becoming the college of choice for many of those high school graduates throughout all of the different schools in our region. We are very focused on quality, and we are very dedicated to helping those students who place into developmental coursework, because frankly, we're not alone in that. Although other colleges and universities don't focus so much on it, underpreparedness is a big problem for all colleges and universities. And so we take that mission very seriously as well. So I think, obviously, my first response is, please, when you determine where your philanthropic dollars are going, think of OCC. But beyond that, I think it's very important that you, as community leaders, people who are in the know, people who are passionate about the well-being of our community, that you really understand the college and that you help others to understand who we are and what our role is in this community and certainly in the higher education landscape. So, if you could do that, we would be extremely grateful. And if you have those skills, expertise that you would be willing to lend to us to help us in our program development, as guest lecturers, in any way that you would see fit, we would very much welcome that as well.
Dr. Seidel, with respect to access, especially non-traditional students, senior learners, and even high school students, do your plans include strategic locations or maintaining satellite location in the town of Clay, for example?
That's such a great question, and actually it's one that, as we're at least preliminarily drafting our goals for this next cycle, this whole aspect of location, how we deliver our programming, is high on the list. First, I'd like to say that we have attempted to be more accessible to people wherever they may be through distance education, online programming. So in our last planning cycle, the one that we're just completing now, we had as a goal 11 full degree programs online by 2011. We're at 9, finishing 10. We think we're going to reach that goal. These are full programs available online. And the population has just exploded with people taking online courses. But you may be interested to know that for most of our students, they're mixing up online with face-to-face, which is an interesting phenomenon. We have residential students who are enrolled in online classes. So your guess is as good as mine about that. They don't want to get up so early, whatever that may be. But that's part of accessibility. To your larger question about the site in Clay at Seneca Mall, the space there that we have is fairly limited, so we have tried in recent years to change programming to be more a 24/7 operation there. We've tried a number of different options. We do hope to be there for at least a while longer, but we are looking strategically at where the college should be located, and I will share with you that we are being very aggressive in looking for a downtown site. We understand that to be one of the community's priorities, the revitalization of downtown Syracuse, and we believe very strongly that we need to be part of that. So although we haven't found a site that works to meet our needs just yet, that certainly will continue to be high on our list. We're also, of course, looking at where the population is in the northern part of Onondaga County and hope to be a partner with some other institutions and organizations in expanding our presence in those locations as well. Thank you.
Two-part, what percentage of your students come from city schools, Syracuse City Schools? Second part, all four high schools in the city are under this special category, and they've got to change them radically. Are you having discussions with the Syracuse City School District to help them and to help yourself and to help the students in this rather pressure-filled environment that the city school district is under?
I don't know what population, what percentage of our population, I'm looking at our wonderful staff, we don't have an exact number. I can tell you that the majority of graduates of Syracuse City Schools who go to college come to OCC. The majority of, say, yes, scholarship recipients come to OCC. So we do capture the large market share of those graduates. In terms of the ways in which we partner with Syracuse City Schools, there are many different programs, Liberty Partnership, trying to think of the Gear Up program. We have ongoing conversations with Syracuse City Schools about ways that we can get into the schools and, for example, do testing earlier so that if a student completes the last math class they need for graduation in 11th grade and then they go a full year and then they come to us and take their placement test, sometimes that's all it takes, that 1 year span without doing math, and they end up in developmental mathematics. We know that once a student gets into developmental programming, their risk of not graduating increases. So we're doing things like trying to get in and administer these placement tests earlier after the student has completed math so that they're all set, ready to go into college-level math either in their senior year through concurrent enrollment or when they come to our campus. So those relationships, I think, between Syracuse City Schools and all of our colleges will continue to be enhanced through Say Yes. We are certainly a partner and a big proponent of that program. But also, I think we have a lot of work to do collectively in working with city schools to improve graduation rates. Did I answer your question?
I think that we'll get the new school district superintendent in when we have one to address that issue from the school district.
But we certainly do want to be part of the solution.
I was intrigued by, I think it was the slide before this one that showed the relative costs of the different programs. And I'm wondering if there are creative ways, if your most expensive programs are also the ones where people are getting placed 100% in jobs, is there a way to tie tuition to future earnings or ask people to pay something after they graduate that would make up some of the costs of those more expensive programs? Or is that philosophically not appropriate?
It's a great idea. In fact, it was part of a legislative proposal from SUNY last year. The Public Higher Education Empowerment and Innovation Act included differential tuition as part of their advocacy plan, but unfortunately it did not get passed by the legislature, so we do not legally have the ability to charge differential tuition. It does make a lot of good sense, but the argument that you will hear, and there is a big debate about the equity issue, so that if it's less expensive to study, a teaching education, and it's more expensive to study nursing or engineering, then you're going to have people of lesser means taking programming and careers that will result in low-income jobs and will keep sort of a status quo in place, as opposed to giving people the broad opportunity to pursue jobs in fields that pay more money. We could ask, maybe get them to sign a contract. That's a great idea. Thank you. And some colleges really are making it up on the fee side. But again, for us, doing it on the front end is really problematic in terms of access. Thank you.
I understand it's just an idea at this point, but in your discussions with the high school principals, you said their concern was with students who are not thriving. I'm interpreting that to mean academically deficient. Now, no? So could you elaborate on that? I mean, because these are not students that are necessarily going to require remediation when they get to, if they get to the campus. So what were they talking about?
Engagement. That there are many high school students by the time they get, especially junior and senior year, I think we all know, senior year in particular, in many cases, students have completed what they need to graduate by the end of 11th grade. And so the senior year can lead to boredom, which can lead to behavioral issues or attitudinal issues that can be detrimental to completion. So the idea is that to have the freedom, the less structured kind of environment of a college campus can really make a huge difference for some high school students. So it's not just about academic performance, it's as much about behavioral.
Okay. I think we have time for one more.
As the director of a not-for-profit agency that serves people with disabilities, I know there are many other agencies like ours that hire the young people that could be or were at one time at OCC, and we have an investment in their training and education. You spoke of partnerships, and we have jobs, and you have education, and we expend resources on training and education. Where in your organization can we enter this collaboration? You speak about it. Yeah.
Asking that. We have a career and applied learning center, and a director of that who is responsible for coordinating these kinds of relationships between academic departments, establishing internships, also posting jobs. So the whole gamut of ensuring that we have effective working relationships with local organizations. So we can leave you a number for that office. And frankly, you bring up a good point that we need to do a better job of making it clear where people go for specific needs at the college. It's really very troubling to me when I hear from people in the community, but also I have to tell you when I hear from students on campus, that they don't know where to go for specific services. And so the communication piece is really something that we have to figure out. Thank you.
Well, thank you for communicating with us this morning. Thank you, Dr. Seidel.